Warning, this is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. Right Choice Services develops individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them that they've always wanted to write. I'm your host today, Vanessa Lowry. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as part of their work. I'm actually sitting in today for our regular host, Dr. Tim Morrison. We were going to share the hosting seats today, but he called me last night and he's sick as a dog, so we decided that even though it's the holiday of sharing, it would be better for him not to share his germs with all of us in the studio today. I'm joined with my co-host and producer, Kevin Finn. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Vanessa.
So have you finished all your holiday shopping?
No, I haven't even started. I got my girlfriend taken care of, and that was about it.
So that's the most important
thing. That's the most important.
Yeah. So. Well, it's going to be a really interesting show today, and I'm excited about the gentleman we have in the studio with us. I'm joined in the studio with two guests, and they're representing two different companies that share a common goal of finding the best fit for the financial and business goals of their clients. The two companies are Axiom Franchise Advisors and Integrity Wealth Center. What do each of these companies do to make sure they find the right fit for their clients, and what sets them apart from their competition? As always, we're going to ask what part writing plays in their business. So I'm going to begin with my friend Bill King. It's so good to see you, Bill. Bill is the founder and president of Axiom Franchise Advisors. Axiom is a premier franchise consulting and brokerage organization that assists entrepreneurs, corporate refugees, dreamers, and many others to understand the benefits of business ownership and how they might control their own destiny and future through franchise ownership. Axiom utilizes proprietary qualifying and search processes to find the best fit for their clients. Welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you for having me. That sounds like something I wrote. That intro. But I'm glad to be here and to share this hour with Keith and Mike, and thank you all for inviting us on.
Well, and it's so good to see you again. You and I used to be in this same networking group and would see each other every week for several years.
So. But that's how God protects people like you. You know, they put some time in between those visits. But it's great to see you again.
No, it's always great to see you. So how did you get interested in franchising?
Wow. Well, I was a corporate refugee, like many of our clients. I had worked for a public corporation, was the CEO of a large apparel company living in New York. We had sold the business a couple of different times, and the life lesson was never to make yourself part of the deal. I had to stay on to make the transaction complete. And I tired of it rather quickly. And kind of a quick story, I came home one Thursday night and said to my wife, I'll be home early tomorrow. And she says, I don't think so. You've never been home early in 12 years that we've lived here. And I said, well, I plan to resign tomorrow. It's the last year of my three-year contract. I've never done it before, but I don't think it takes a long time. So I expect I'll be home early tomorrow. And I walked into the office and reported to a Belgian guy on my board, and I had told my staff that I had planned this departure, and there was nothing in my office, nothing at all but a telephone on my desk. I had shipped everything home.
Wow.
And communicated to everybody that this was going to be my last day, and I called the chairman of the board, and he came down, and I looked at him, and we had I think can best be described as a rather acrimonious relationship, and you know, I got stupid overnight after they bought us, and it was like starting every day of my life with a fist fight. And I just told him that, you know, he wasn't going to get what I was going to say, and it wouldn't take me long, but you've made what should have been the most difficult professional and personal decision easy to make, and I resented him for it because of the way they had treated me in this transaction. And I got up and walked out of the office. I went downstairs and had a car waiting for me and drove around a corner in Manhattan, went to a bodega, and I bought a 10-pound bag of ice, a paper cup, and a quart of Dura Scotch, and I became an entrepreneur.
That is quite the story.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've got a little funny story about how small the world is. When you and I were in the networking group together, it was an early morning group, and one morning I was leaving right after to go to West Virginia where my family lives, and you said, "Where in West Virginia?" And I said, "Oh, Beckley." And I said, "My sister lives in Princeton." And you used to visit Princeton all the time.
Yeah,
which is a little tiny town in West Virginia.
Yeah, great state. Know all the little towns and a lot of the people there. It is a small world.
It is a small world.
Sure it is.
So you sold this company, and then you got interested in franchising. What were some of the reasons that you decided that was going to be the step that you took of helping people match up with franchises?
Well, like a lot of people that begin their entrepreneurial career, you know, through a lot of epiphanies, different things that happen to them, you know, some find themselves displaced. It's not a voluntary act, but they, like most people, start to explore, you know, what are the options? What do I want to do? What am I good at? And an awful lot of people, certainly, you know, I did. I wanted to do something completely different. I looked at it as a fabulous opportunity to get away from what I had spent 26 years with and try something new and try to regenerate some excitement and some enthusiasm with what I did by taking control of my destiny. And I looked at everything. And, you know, the first thing is most people become consultants, which is a term today that's used interchangeably with being out of work. And I became an industry consultant because that was easy to stay connected to that business, but it really wasn't a pathway to developing anything new for my future. So I started to look at buying, building, or creating a business. And when I went through the exploratory process of looking at all of those options, franchising just, for me, it isn't everybody's answer, but in my case, it kept bubbling up to the top as having all the attributes that I was looking for. You know, most people that find success by being a small business owner don't do it by creating a new idea. It's about doing something that somebody else has done and doing it better. And I thought, you know, being basically lazy, I'm Irish, but why did I want to work that hard? I went out there and started to look at what those opportunities were in the franchising industry, starting with buying one. I mean, that's the first place that most people would start that process when they're looking at that industry. And I became intrigued by how those people were being introduced to concepts and whether or not there was somebody or an organization that was credible enough that would focus on the educational side of it. In other words, helping the client understand what his expectations are as a business owner rather than focusing on the transaction. It's a lot of what Keith and Mike have created in their business. So, you know, to me, it's a great validation that this is what works. So I honestly started with becoming an independent broker, did it for a while, and then I am cursed with taking something simple and small and always feeling like it's got to be complicated and bigger. So in the last quarter of 2006, with a partner, we created Axiom Franchise Advisors as a national consulting group. And we clearly, when we started that business, the idea was to focus on the education for the client, not the transaction. The easy part of what we do, frankly, is to find something that is suitable and appropriate in terms of the right kind of business format for the client. But we never start there. It's all about, let me get to know you at a very deep level. What's driving this decision? Is it a valid decision? Do you have the resources? You came out of the corporate world. Myself, I was surrounded by support. You won't find that in most small businesses. You end up having to wear a lot of hats, doing a lot of things, and many of the things that you might not be prepared for, and worse than that, that you don't anticipate in the business.
Well, and I know when I first met you, that was kind of my first introduction to this education part of franchises, that there were people out there and companies out there, and I was so impressed with that you actually, you know, we'll talk to people that are considering a franchise to see if they're even, you know, if it even fits the kind of lifestyle they want to have or the kind of income they want to have or the kind of work that they want to do. And I thought that was so remarkable that you were available to do that and that it was something that you were happy to do. And that was part of, you know, that it didn't really cost the person anything to talk to you, that it was the franchisor that was paying your fee if they decided to go with it, franchise.
That's important to understand that, you know, using a professional consultant does not cost the client any money at all. There's no investment except time, which we explain, and clearly we ask that they buy into the commitment that it takes to go through a proper due diligence with the companies that we will find. But the economics, I mean, we don't do this for free. But the economics are that the companies that we represent that are contractually obligated to us will pay us a marketing fee if we find and vet and present a qualified candidate. They give me what essentially I call the entrepreneur's DNA list. What makes their best franchise owner? What are the attributes, resources, interpersonal skills, professional background, things of that sort? And then what we do is we get a wish list from the client. And we want to know what's most important. Everybody's going to think it's making money, and it's really not. The number one reason that most people come to us is they want to affect a change in their life, remove the pain, and take control of their life. They just want to get off the treadmill. Maybe they're traveling too much. Maybe a young lady finds the glass ceiling, and she can't be competitive with her compensation or advancement in the company. Women, by the way, are going into franchising at a rate of 3 times that of men for those kinds of reasons.
Wow, that's amazing.
So we think that these are important things to speak first about, right, and not focus on the transaction.
So what are some common misconceptions about franchising?
Well, probably most often, as I did in speaking to a client and his father on Friday, the father was actually acquiring the franchise to employ his son. Father lives in another state. Son lives here. Son academically has an MBA, but can't find work. So the father was willing to be the financier to acquire the franchise, make the son the operator. And as soon as we hung up from our one-hour dialogue, I get an email. In fact, I think it was being typed while we were still on the phone, because I got it from the son, and the first thing that it said was, can you find me a franchise that will yield me a minimum of $70,000 a year in the first year's salary? Well, we don't sell ATM machines. You start a business, and I don't know of anything that has a business format that would allow you from day one to stick the key in the door, and it will throw out $70,000. Now, eventually, that business should reach a maturation point if it has the capabilities of doing so, to which maybe the salary becomes, part of the revenue. But, frankly, I called him yesterday, and we had another chat, an educational chat, and I explained, if your father seems to think that you're worth $70,000 a year in the new business he acquires, then that becomes part of his business format. He's mm-hmm. got to look at that as additional capital cost, and therefore that business coming to full financial maturation is going to take a little longer, because that $70,000 is going into a middle manager. Not a bad idea, but the franchise isn't going to itself. The format doesn't finance his salary. So people think that they buy a business and they're buying a job rather than, building a financial enterprise. And they think from day one that if they had a significant, let's say a six-figure salary in corporate America, that they want to replicate that immediately, and it's never the case. Absolutely never the case.
Well, and you mentioned earlier about the trend of more women buying franchises now. What are some other trends in franchises that you're noticing?
We're seeing a lot of movement away from the traditional brick-and-mortar kind of franchise. And not that those are bad. It's just economics right now are proving that other formats are more desirable, and they include home-based businesses, which are growing at a rate of 25% of all franchises right now and continues to grow at about 10% a year, and mobile franchises. And the idea is that they have less of a barrier of entry in terms of capital investment because you remove the brick-and-mortar component, right? But more attractive is the fact that they're scalable. They're more economically favorable to scale. Example, if you had a service business, Let's just talk about one that we represent, Glass Doctor, fabulous franchise, and they replace glass in automobiles and commercial and residential properties. To scale that business, instead of putting a new building up, a new retail center, which is very costly, you hire another technician and lease a truck. So these businesses, for those reasons, are becoming very, very popular because they're driven by the economics.
Well, Bill, I know that you're involved in all aspects of your business. So what kind of writing do you do in your business? What are some regular types of writing that you do?
Well, I'm glad that you asked the question because, you know, you have in many ways been my mentor. And I just want to share it with the fellows here and the listening audience. First of all, from the standpoint of the importance of writing in our business, it's about the communications. We constantly and on a daily basis are talking from the written word to our clients, to our franchisor partners, and to our connectors, you know, the people that we're doing business with. And one of the things that, that you know, we pay a lot of attention to, you know, the internet and the email, all that's made communications more efficient, but I think it's diluted the content and the writing skills of most people. And in the case of emails, you know, if I showed you some of the things that I get, hopefully not that we send, but the things that I get from other people, sentence structure, grammatical errors, it's embarrassing and it reflects poorly. And I'll give you the example. If it's a client and he writes to me and it's riddled with those kinds of problems, and I have to share that with the franchisor. Maybe there's something within that writing that he's asking me to do with the franchisor. I pass that on, and they start to look at that client and say, I wonder if he's our guy or our gal.
Well, because there's a lot of details that have to be looked at in running a business. And
absolutely.
If you're overlooking some details, people assume you might overlook
absolutely.
Other details.
And the point that I was making to you, at one time, you are an entrepreneur down at your socks. And one time there was a company that you founded called Progress.
Profits in Progress.
Profits in Progress. Thank you. You know, I still keep a card box on my desk. And I make it a goal to write 3 cards a day to people I've either talked to or met. I can't tell you how many times I have had somebody after receiving that card, by the way, it's not you don't write an epistle, a couple of quick sentences, thanking somebody for taking the time to meet with you. And the response, geez, nobody does this anymore. And, you know, I wasn't going to set that meeting, but now I feel compelled to. You know, you're far more professional in how you present yourself. I'm more willing to give you my time because I think you'll treat it more respectfully. You know, it's old-fashioned, and nobody does it anymore. And oftentimes, you know, all of us, the small business owners, are struggling. How do we provide differentiation in our business without large budgets to do so, marketing budgets? Here's something that doesn't cost you anything but the cost of the card. And I have used it more effectively in our business than almost any other thing that we do, and we now teach it when we are training a new consultant. We teach them the value of the handwritten note.
Well, thank you. That makes my heart so happy. I appreciate that.
I'm here to make your heart happy.
So, Bill, tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and find out more about Axiom Franchise Advisors.
Well, thanks. They can always call me directly, and the Atlanta number is 770-552-8804, 770-552-8804, or they can go on the web and learn about us, www.4 Axiom, AXXIOM.com. So they can peruse that website. And remember, you know, we're like the Match.com for entrepreneurs, but our results are much less disappointing.
Well, Bill, thank you so much. And if you can hang with us in the studio, I'm going to interview our next guest, and then we're going to open the mics for everybody.
I'd be pleased.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Well, our next guest is Keith Bowers. He is president of Integrity Wealth Management, an independent financial advisory firm headquartered in Alpharetta, Georgia. Integrity offers securities and investment advisory services through Next Financial Group, Inc., a member of FINRASIPC. There's probably shorthand for that Keith will have to tell us about. Integrity Wealth Management, Inc. is not an affiliate of Next Financial Group, Inc. Welcome, Keith. We're glad to have you with
us. Good morning.
Well, and the other thing that I didn't say is that you're an independent investment services firm, and you take pride in providing customized financial planning and wealth management solutions for your clients by using an all-inclusive set of strategies that aim to grow, manage, protect, and distribute assets in a planned and integrated manner.
That's correct.
That sounds like something that clients are just going to be all over, that you can invest and grow their investments and help guide them with that.
Well, you know, as was mentioned earlier, I firmly believe that in communicating with your clients, it is of paramount importance to educate these folks and to really sit down with them to find out exactly what they're looking for. You know, in this industry, it's so broad-based. And for us, it's really important that we specialize in working with a niche group of clientele. It's literally impossible to be a jack of all trades, frankly. And so what we did is many, many years ago, I sat down with a mentor of mine who said, you know, if you're going to be great at what you do, Keith, you're going to have to find a niche group of clientele, work only with that niche group of clientele, providing a specialized service for that niche group of clientele. And then he gave me the bad news. And the bad news was simply that if you meet someone who's looking for something that you're not great at, then you need to do the right thing and turn them away as a client, which was painful information early on in my career, but it made so much logical sense that I said, you know, this is what I'm going to do. So in our case, what we really do is we specialize in working primarily with people who are nearing retirement in creating a comprehensive financial plan for them, educate them on where we see tax rates going, as an example. It's a pretty important topic these days. There's a big concern, and rightfully so, that with this growing budget deficit we now are faced with, that we're going to see higher tax rates. And it's really a demographic issue, frankly. It's based on the baby boomer population. If you were born between 1964 and 1946, you're a baby boomer. And if you're in the back of the line, then frankly, we're going to see tax rates go higher for these folks during their retirement. So the one place where most people put the majority of their assets is probably the least tax-efficient place we can be, and that's in a 401k. We benefit from the pre-tax contribution, absolutely, but that money grows tax-deferred and then is taxed at ordinary income tax rates later on in life. So what we're doing now is we're taking a very proactive role in showing people how they can create tax efficiencies during their retirement so that we either minimize or at least mitigate some of that tax burden that they'll be faced with down the road.
So what made you decide on this particular niche of client?
Oh, that's a great question. I probably have to go back several years. For many, many years, we focused on estate planning. We worked with seniors, and we educate these folks, and still do, primarily from referrals from existing clients. But we educate these folks on the fact that there's a death tax in this country. And I've been astounded by this, but some of my highest net worth clients weren't even aware that if they've saved a lot of money and then one day die, they're going to owe, or at least their estate will, they're going to owe quite a bit of money in estate taxes. And so we made it our business to learn about this death tax and then to show people how they can minimize that impact on their families. And I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed it very much. But I had a very difficult lesson to learn. Back in 2000, I had, I think it was 18 funerals to attend.
Oh, wow.
These 18 clients were, you know, all favorite clients of mine. I had grown to care about them a great deal, done a great job in showing them how they can save money in taxes when they're gone for their families. And then next thing you know, their kids swooped in and took their inheritances and went their separate ways.
And went to other financial advisors.
Well, in Atlanta, you know, we're a hodgepodge here. You know, there are people from all over the country. And these kids are from New Jersey and from California. And I never really had an opportunity to really get to meet these folks. And so, you know, they swoop in and they take their money and thank you very much for saving us all that money in taxes and have a nice day.
Right.
And about $17 million left my practice. And I thought, you know what? I'm beating my head against the wall here. You know, in our industry, it's all about building assets under management and helping these clients grow and save those assets. And so now this money's walking out the door. I said, you know, Keith, you have to work with a younger clientele. Well, being a baby boomer myself, I thought, you know, I think we can do some really great work in helping people plan for their retirement.
Well, and I love that entrepreneurs, I find this all the time, that entrepreneurs are so flexible, you know, that they come up with, they find a challenge and they are able to be flexible to come around that challenge. So I love that, and Bill, maybe you find this too, that, you know, people that haven't ever had their own business think you come up with a plan and you do that and it's just going to be successful right there, as opposed to you do something and it's successful for a while and then trends happen or business changes and you have to flex.
You have to be adaptable. Indeed, you do. For us, I will say that I'm the most excited I've been in my career. You know, from a client's perspective, you know, if you're sitting down with someone like me, you really want to ask them, what is it you're really good at? Instead of telling them what you're looking for and hoping that you found the right fit, I think instead it's very important to ask the question, who do you work with, what do you specialize in, and what are you great at? And then if that meets your needs, then indeed you found the right person. You know, this is really all about a long-term relationship in our industry. We work with people, and then we work with their families, we hope. And so for us, we tell our clients that it's extremely important that we go through a process to determine whether or not you're a good fit for our practice and whether we're a good fit for you and your needs. And so we go through this comprehensive planning process, which typically takes 3 to 5 meetings at least, several hours per meeting. And I just made the business decision many years ago not to charge an hourly rate when I meet with my clients, not to charge for the fee for the financial plan, simply because I don't want someone to balk at paying $1,500, as an example, what is what most people charge for these plans. I don't want anybody to balk at that prospect. I want them to get excited about going through the process of creating financial control in their lives. And so we go through this process, and the bottom line is we are here to determine what rate of return a client needs to earn to meet the goals they've set for themselves. In other words, I'd like to retire at age 65. I'd like to net $100,000 a year after taxes. Am I on track to do so? Well, if unfortunately you're not on track, then my hope is that I can educate you to, let's set some realistic goals here. Let's look at some realistic numbers. But if indeed the client says, no, this is what I have to have, and that rate of return necessary to hit that goal is too high, well, frankly, they're not a good fit for us. And so it's all about going through that process.
Well, and I know that you started your own firm. You started the Integrity Wealth Management firm. What made you decide to go out on your own and start this particular business?
That's a great question. I started my career at a major brokerage firm and worked very hard to grow my clientele there, and was at constant battle with upper management as to why I would not recommend their products. So any major firm is going to have their own what we call proprietary products, either real estate investment trusts or mutual funds, limited partnerships, that sort of thing. And I was at constant battle with upper management as to why wouldn't you recommend our products? And the simple answer is this. I've always believed my job is to do the right thing for the client. It's the client I have to answer to, not upper management at this firm. And when asked, why didn't I recommend their mutual funds? As an example, I would say, well, your fees are higher than the industry average. Your returns haven't been that great. My job is to find the best product for my client. And unfortunately, it's not yours. And so after years of embattlement with upper management about this, I said, you know, I'm going to have to start my own practice. I did that back in 1995.
That's a long time. Well, and I know that it sounds like you work with clients to review their whole portfolio and help them with the total wealth management.
Indeed.
So they probably come to you with some things already in place and some things that they're already investing in. I'm curious, what have been some unusual things that people are investing in?
Unusual things?
I just read a book in a novel where a collector was collecting vintage clothing, and I thought, as an investment, and I thought, really? People can do that?
Boy, I've seen just about everything under the sun. You know, instead of saying what would be some unusual investments, I would say, what have been some unusual circumstances? Let's go that route,
okay.
if I may. I've had clients come into my office and say, you know, I was referred to you from a friend. They spoke very highly of you, and I'd like for you to take a look at what my current advisors, invested my assets in. Well, you know, in this industry, I think people have a tendency to really try to pick apart what someone else has done. And I think that that bodes negatively on our industry. What I'd like to do instead is to say, you know, I've done this a long time. I have a lot of clients. I'll gladly sit down with you and I'll take a look at your current portfolio. And there have been times when I've said, you know, you've got a good guy here. He's doing good work for you. And I don't really see any need to change.
And I'm sure that shocks them.
And the look on their faces is just amazing. But what's interesting is I just found a long time ago, and it's funny, I grew up in a small town, and I used to be a little embarrassed by that, especially living in the big town of Atlanta now. But I learned some values there that I took with me into my career. We had the same pharmacist and the same veterinarian, and you know, you really had to develop long-term relationships, like it or not, with these folks. And so, the underlying theme there was always do the right thing for people. And so that's what I've done. And it's so funny how that comes back around. So in one particular case, when I told this individual they were in good hands, I received 3 referrals from that
wow.
person. And those clients weren't in good hands. And so it's funny how that works. But, there have been times when the comeback has been, okay, well, that's great, but I've heard you're really great at what you do and you're more convenient to me and I'd really like to work with you. And so there, of course, I'll take on the client, but I think it's very important that we be forthright and honest with folks.
Well, and trust is so important in your industry, and it sounds
Absolutely.
Like that definitely comes back to you when you are saying things that your clients know they can trust.
Absolutely, yes.
So what are some common misconceptions about wealth management?
I think people have a tendency to worry about the wrong things. There's so much negative news out now. Well, if you look back historically, there's always been negative news. There's always been the pundits who want to scare us out of investing. If you listen to CNBC, and certainly I listen all the time and watch all the time. I live, breathe, and eat this stuff, and I'm a bit of a dork that way, I guess you might say. But when you listen to CNBC, you have to realize and understand something. It's their advertisers that keep them in business. And their advertisers want you glued to that station, watching what's going on a day-to-day basis, and to be worried about what's happening on a day-to-day basis. And so, unfortunately, it's that type of scenario that can get people in trouble because they get too emotionally tied up into all of this. And so, from our perspective, we'd like to educate people on what you should really be concerned about. And these days, frankly, it's longevity. When you retired in the 1950s at age 65 and your company said, Bill, you've done a great job for us. Here's a pension. We're going to take care of you. We're going to pay your health care costs.
Right.
Well, you died 3 years later.
Right.
So that's the reason pensions are going away, by the way, is simply because people are living too long. But when you're taking withdrawals from your investments and you're planning on living maybe 20 years in your retirement, and you end up living 30 to 35 years, that can become a problem. And so we like to educate our clients on that type of risk. There's another risk. It's called sequence of returns. And basically what that means is simply this. If you look at a chart and you say, okay, we're going to average 8% per year, and you're in the accumulation phase leading up to retirement. Well, if you have down years in the early years and then up years in the later years and you earn 8%, you're going to end up with the same rate of return and the same amount of money as if you had down years in the later years and up years in the early years. And so you've ended up with the same amount of money, and an investment advisor will say, hey, take a look. You're going to get 8% per year. We could take out a 4% distribution rate. You're going to be fine. Not necessarily the case, actually. With sequence of returns, what that basically means is simply If at your retirement you start taking withdrawals and you have down years in the early years and then up years in the later years, you're in trouble. Conversely, if you're lucky and you have up years in the early years and then down years in the later years, you're not. And it's simply because you built up a cushion in those early years with those higher rates of returns. And so it's very important for clients to recognize that in the distribution phase, we have to mitigate risk, and we have to do a very effective job at that. And so through an educational process, we can show clients how they can do this and have success.
Well, just a very valid reason why somebody would want somebody that considers themselves a dork that watches CNBC and is up on all of those things, because most of us are not. So that's wonderful. So I'm curious, Keith, what kind of writing that you all engage in as part of your business?
Well, you know, just as Bill had mentioned, effective writing is really of paramount importance these days. It's astounding to see the younger generation. You know, we were talking before the show about our kids, and, you know, I have a Georgia Tech grad, an Auburn grad, and a Georgia grad. The Georgia grad went on to graduate at BC. He's a phenomenal writer. My Georgia Tech grad hopefully will not hear this. She's not a great writer. She's brilliant, but she's not a great writer. And so I've really worked with her on honing in on her skills. From our perspective in our industry, you know, when I sit down with a client, I'm going to shoot them an email recanting what took place during our meeting, my interpretation of the comments that were made during the meeting, reiterating what we're going to be doing for the next meeting, and then the information that I'm requesting for our next meeting. And I take ample time to effectively communicate in writing what we're looking to accomplish here. It's important, I think, that in writing, especially from a business standpoint, you want to communicate as if you're speaking to the client in written form. I think you would probably agree that that type of communications builds trust. And so we're very much honed in on communicating in that way. We provide a newsletter for our clients, as an example, giving them updates on what's happening in the economy and the stock market and with politics. And we really want to effectively communicate to them in written form as if we were communicating to them personally. And I think we do a pretty good job at that.
Well, and you mentioned communication, and that is so key in every business, but particularly, I would think, in your type of business where you're working with people and their money.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Keith, how can our listeners get in touch with you and find out more about Integrity Wealth Management?
Well, we're located in Alpharetta, as mentioned earlier. Our phone number is 770-587-9333. Again, 770-587-9333.
Well, and we're going to open up the mics and get Bill back in on the conversation. Before we went on air, we were talking a little bit, or you all were talking about a workshop that you all have done together. So I would love for both of you to talk a little bit about how your two companies kind of work with the same clients with this educational workshop.
Well, one of the things that we've had tremendous success in is in helping executives who are in job transition. And we work, our clientele is a more affluent clientele, typically clients in their 50s who are in job transition. And so we provide an educational workshop to these folks to help them survive, number one, this transition, and then to, number two, effectively plan for their future to gain financial control and get their financial house in order. And one of the aspects that we'd like to incorporate there is to say, you know, in this economy, sometimes it's a little difficult to find that next high-paying job as someone in their mid-50s. You know, might you consider starting a franchise? And then we make the introduction. There are effective ways in which someone who is in job transition looking to start their own franchise can access retirement funds to do so. And so we like to sit down with these folks, walk them through the process, show them what their options are, and then make the introduction to Bill and his team to determine, if possible, this might make some sense for them.
See, there's such a great synergy between our two companies because of the cross-marketing opportunities. based on the same things as the foundation for each of our businesses. We are both really pointed at doing right for the client. And in doing right for the client, that begins with an educational process. You know, what are the options? What are the objectives? And we're going to have similar conversations with our client. There are always two professionals that we recommend to the client at different times during the due diligence process of looking at a franchise opportunity. One, of course, is to engage a franchise attorney when it comes to the agreement itself. And secondly, and just as important, is to have a good professional financial advisor sit down with you and ascertain, you know, not to have them comment as to whether or not this is the right business for you. That should be assumed. But their role, more importantly, is what's the best way to acquire it? What are the objectives to be accomplished within the plan? And then we work mutually with our partners in that regard. So this is a fabulous opportunity for our two businesses to come closer together.
Well, and Bill, I know that there's all kinds of different franchises out there. Can you give us an idea of what kind of range of investment people would be looking at when they're wanting to look at franchises?
Sure. Understanding that it's a broad brush when I answer something like that. But in most cases, a single license franchise would typically involve a total investment of about $150,000. And the range could ratchet up to $200,000 to $250,000. But that doesn't mean that they have to be acquired on an all-cash basis, and that's part of what Keith was speaking to, that there are finance opportunities that one could apply and reduce the amount of cash involved. Typically, they're through a traditional lending source such as SBA, there's going to be a 70% loan-to-value. Quick math, if they were looking at a $100,000 franchise, they could actually acquire it with $30,000 of cash and finance the rest, you know, if they meet the approval requirements. And, you know, there's all other types of options, friends, family, fools. There are non-traditional lenders that provide a very valuable service as interim financing, acquisition financing. And then they can place permanent financing with somebody else and more affordably so. But, you know, if somebody has, and here are the kind of the three metrics that a franchisor is looking for. Number one, they want to know something about your background. What have you done? Where have you done it? And how recently have you done it? And how have you performed to those tasks? They're not looking for a deep discipline in any one business category. They'd much rather have somebody that spent some time doing sales, marketing, business development. Maybe you've got and have touched operations and finance, but you don't need to be an expert. You're a better candidate on that basis than you are having spent 15 years as an accountant. So they're looking for something that's flat but has multiple disciplines. Number two and three are financial metrics that kind of play off one another. Net worth should be around $250,000. It could be higher depending on what they're looking at. And the liquidity position, $50,000, $100,000 is better, but $50,000. And we're talking about these metrics as they apply to what I deem to be non-hobby businesses. These are real investment quality franchise systems. And, you know, under normal conditions, let's say, people can build some wealth out of these types of formats. Last and just as important to a franchisor is your motivation to complete a due diligence. If you start this process and you're not ready to complete that 30 to 60 days, you're most likely not going to be engaged as a serious candidate.
So, Keith, just as Bill was saying, you know, that number two and number three are all around the financial part. Do you find that your clients typically are coming to you and saying, hey, I want to look at this as an option, or is it something that, like, through these educational workshops, you're presenting to them as saying, you might want to consider this? How does that conversation start?
Well, you know, in our case, you basically see two different scenarios. Oftentimes, one, a client has come and said, you know, here's that goal. This is where I'd like to be. This is when I'd like to retire. And in some cases, they're just not on track. They really haven't saved enough. Yet we see a situation where, you know, this individual might be a good candidate for a franchise. You know, the harsh reality is simply this. If you're 55 years of age and you haven't saved enough, then you're not really going to be able to retire comfortably through the traditional norm that we all consider. And so in a situation like that, especially if this individual is having a difficult time finding another position that paid what he was enjoying, or 75%, which is usually the norm these days, of what he was enjoying, then maybe this is an option as a last recourse, or a last, you know, option for that individual. That's, you know, on the extreme case. On another case, we see someone who's been tremendously successful, but is now frustrated with the travel, as an example, as Bill had mentioned. You know, just saying, you know, I'd really like to take control of my own destiny. And this individual may very well be on track for his retirement goals and can afford to take the plunge, if you will, in you know, trying to start his own business. That is another really good candidate. So, you know, you have to just look at each individual and look at their circumstances, have a conversation. You know, is this something you've considered? And if so, then absolutely the referral is made.
Well, this has really been such a fascinating conversation, and I love talking to smart people. People that are smarter than me. So
me
thank
being
you.
The exception.
No, of course not. But thank you all so much. And the clock is on us. It's hard to believe that, Kevin, isn't it? It goes so fast.
It does. It's a very interesting show. I was learning a lot.
Yeah.
Just taking notes.
Well, I appreciate you all being on the show. And we welcome the comments and suggestions about content and our guests from our listeners. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Kevin, for handling the controls for us today.
No problem.
And thank you to our guests, Bill King of Axiom Franchise Advisors and Keith Bowers of Integrity Wealth Center. Bill, can you give us your contact information one more time?
Sure. The office number is 770-552-8804. Website, www.4axiom.com.
Great. And Keith, your contact information?
Ours again is 770-587-9333. Again, 770-587-9333. And you can also check us out on the web at www.integritywealthcenter.com.
Excellent. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. Send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. The MP3 version of our show will be available later today on that website as well. I'm Vanessa Lowry. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right Here, Right Now.